creating and rekindling memories. NHR.
They, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, and a song called Messages. Now, from what I've found out about FND, FND is all about messages being passed sort of to the brain and the brain back to the body and everything else like that. But that is a very simplified version of it. Somebody who definitely knows a lot more about this is my guest this morning, Liam Virgo. Good morning, Liam. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolute, well. Absolute pleasure. And yeah, I'm so pleased you managed to find the studios okay, because it's a bit of a warren out there. So, but I'm pleased that you've managed to find it. So, I mean, what exactly is FND? Because I don't think a lot of people know an awful lot about this, do they?
Well, FND is a condition which affects how the brain receives and sends information to the rest of the body. It's an invisible illness, as it doesn't show up on a scan. FND can often be described as the software problem, rather than the hardware. So structurally, the brain and bones are okay, but the heart, but the software is all mixed up, and that's where the problem is.
Right, that makes it a little bit bit simpler. I think this computer that we've got this morning is having a bit of trouble with that, because nothing seems to be wanting to work properly on there. So now, up until 12 years old, I take it you were just a normal lad, really, and then all of a sudden, FND hit. So what happened?
Well, at first, I had some learning problems, cognitive issues. Then the physical health started to deteriorate. And I needed support to walk, and my brain was just slowly shutting down on me, and I didn't know what was happening around me. And then things rapidly took a turn for the worse, and I couldn't talk, and then I couldn't walk.
You see, we sort of take these sort of things so much for granted. I mean, especially here, you know, we just rabbit on like anything, and, you know, talking is second nature. And I suppose to lose that, the sort of ability just to talk to people, that must have been, I think shocking is a bit of an understatement, because one minute you can talk and then the next minute nothing comes out. That must have been so frustrating for you and your mum and dad.
But at the time, I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
Because, you see, I don't really remember the early days of my illness, and life before it is a blur. I really struggle to remember the early days. But from what I can remember is I just didn't feel right. I just started feeling unwell. And what happened was, as well, is while I was at the school, I had to be physically held up by two members of staff. And then in the end, they said it wasn't safe for me to go to school anymore. And that's what, probably a few days after that, I lost all abilities. And then I was rushed to hospital for testing. And then while I was in the hospital for 4 months, the doctors were baffled by my illness. And they filmed my case for medical research for universities.
And from what I've read online, you know, you called the doctor up when you sort of this first happened. And I believe a GP just said to get moving.
Well, that was perhaps probably a few years after that.
Right.
Yeah, that was a few years. That's the misunderstanding part of FND.
Yeah.
Yeah, but while I was in the hospital, I had so many tests and medical procedures, but everything came back normal.
And of course, the health professionals, they mistook every single symptom. Said it was autism or psychosis or something.
Yeah, they did. They said that. And for quite a while, they said he had an unknown disorder.
Which is not much good to you and your parents or anything. With something like that. You want to know what's happening to you, and especially when it happens that quickly as well. That must have been sort of really frightening, not only for you, but for your mum and dad as well, not knowing what it was and it being so, you know, sort of disabling, if you like.
I was suddenly and severely disabled without any really explanation for what happened. You know, having all my abilities taken away from me just so suddenly like that is and just developing a disability at 13 is a life-altering event. It's life-changing, you know, and it has an impact not only physically but mentally as well.
Yeah.
Because the emotional scars FND has left on me are still felt to this day.
That you can understand. So, I mean, you're only, what, 22, 23?
Yeah, 23 now.
23, and for I mean, that period of time, that's 10 years of your life where most people of that age, that they're off out, they're playing with the mates and everything.
I wasn't able to do any of it.
You missed everything.
F&D took everything away from me, really. And then once I was discharged from hospital, I was given some basic equipment and not much, and a couple of leaflets and not much support, really. Even though I did have lots of, you know, different services involved, but it... nobody really knew what to do. They didn't really know what was happening, and they thought, you know, they didn't really understand how to, because even some of the doctors said they'd never really come across a case of F&D as severe and sudden as mine did, really.
And yeah. And they'd got no sort of record of sort of anybody else, you know, in the UK who been hit like this, that they could sort of, you know, look up?
Probably they did, but especially in children as well, it might have been different.
Yeah.
You know, when I was at the children's hospital, they probably come across it, but not in, not F&D itself being, because F&D, to have it as severe as mine, to have it very severe like I did it, I think everybody was baffled, really, because they didn't know. I didn't have any explanation for why it happened and what was the cause of it, because nobody knew why it happened. It just happened. You know, I can't think of anything what caused it. It just suddenly happened.
It's not like, you know, sort of some sort of disease where you can catch something from something and that affects you. It, you know, it just sort of hits and no reasons... or anything like that, that the doctors could find.
And,
anyway.
And the hardest part is it doesn't show up on a scan. And it's invisible. It's invisible to blood tests, scans. So, like I said, all the tests I had, they just came back normal.
So so when did they actually find out what it was and what FND was? When was this sort of timeline?
It was after 4 months in hospital. They said I had FND / conversion disorder,
right,
which is an outdated term now, but now it's known as FND. And they also said I had catatonia and dystonia. And catatonia is like you are awake, but you're not, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And dystonia is stiffness, and it makes your body go in all sorts of different abnormal positions that the body wouldn't normally be able to get itself into. So not only did I battle F&D, I battled with two other conditions. So once I was discharged from hospital, F&D struck again and I lost the ability to sit up. And then that was probably one of the hardest parts. I was given a special wheelchair, but it didn't really last long. Then I was put into a special school, because I wasn't able to return to the old school. So I briefly attended a special school, but they did not know how to support me or look after me. And at times I would hear whispering saying, it's a mental health problem, it's all in his head, he's attention seeking. All of that language is unacceptable and unforgivable, and it must never be said to someone who's got F&D. At the time that was said, I couldn't speak up.
I mean, why would anybody want to, you know, sort of do that, to pretend...
Nobody could put their head on their knees like mine was. My head was on my knees because that was my comfortable position. I was in agony if I sat up. I couldn't do it. And they said, we've never come across somebody like Liam before. And there was for 6 months as well, I can only describe it as my mind switched off. But then eventually my brain functioning improved and I could hear and understand what was happening. And then when I could understand, I could hear whispering, just whispering behind my back. You say, oh, he's pretending, he's attention seeking, and it's a mental health problem. When it wasn't, it was F&D.
Yeah.
But they'd never come across somebody like me. And in the end, I had to leave because it wasn't safe for me. And I couldn't cope throughout the day.
And that must have been so frustrating for you to be able to hear what they were saying and not be able to tell them basically what idiots they were.
Yeah, I know. I would never tolerate anything like that now.
Yeah.
But back then, I couldn't speak up. But because that's what F&D did to me. It took my speech and it took my identity, really, as well. Yeah.
Right, I tell you what, we're going to take a break. I've asked you to choose the music this morning. It's a great choice in music, by the way.
Yeah.
Tell us about Alison Limerick, Where Love Lives. Why this choice?
Well, that's for my mum, who cared for me when I was poorly with F&D, and that's her favourite song.
My guest this morning is Liam Virgo, who really is an education to have him in the studio, finding out about what FND is. So you touched on this just before that, education. I mean, how has your education been affected by FND and not being able to, I hate to use the term, fit in to a normal school, because I mean you were sort of at a normal school before this, yeah, this hit you. And you said that, you know, you've sort of had sort of personal tuition. Tell us about that.
Well, I wasn't well enough to return to school, so I was home tutored. And they was really understanding. They really understood me. And when I was well enough, we did day trips, sensory activities, rehabilitation tasks. And it was all done pressure-free. It was no pressure. I was learning how to write again, move my arms. It was all done very slowly, and when my body could, cope with it. Because my brain couldn't do things until it was ready to do it. And just, like I said before, just a huge part of my story is, it got to the stage where I couldn't tolerate being on any form of equipment apart from my hospital bed. The only place my body felt comfortable was on my bed. And then what happened was I became bedridden, and I was bedridden for 3 years, and I felt trapped inside my own body because I couldn't cope with being on any wheelchair, posture chair. My body just used to tense up, and I used to drop forwards. And so the only place I felt relaxed and comfortable was on my bed.
And I mean, well, I say looking at you now, radio, you can't see. just looking across at Liam, he's in a wheelchair. He's sitting up brilliantly. Yeah. So you can see the progress that in that period of time has gone on. You must have found it so isolated, just sort of not being able to move from that hospital bed, not wanting to move there, you know, with it being your comfort zone. I mean, how isolated did you actually feel, sort of being there?
Well, it was very lonely and isolating, but that's the only place I felt comfortable. Mm. So that was my safe place, really, my bed was, because anything else I just was in absolute agony on. The only place I felt relaxed was on the bed. But it was when I was bedbound I found comforts in a few things, and one of them being London. And it was my dream to visit the city, but because of FND I wasn't well enough to go. And my teams at CAMHS and the team from Great Ormond Street who came to see me created me a progress chart, which was helped to use motivate me to achieve my wish of visiting the city. And if I moved a finger or moved my arm slightly, I would get a sticker, so that would mean I'm one step closer to achieving that wish.
Brilliant. So what's it about London then that sort of attracts you, that you want to
go? I can't even remember
there?
The first time I saw it, but it was probably on the TV, and I just thought, oh, I'd love to visit the city one day. And it just was everything I dreamed of, you know, but because of FND it didn't seem possible.
Yeah,
you know. But then during that time as well is when small improvements started to happen. So my words slowly came back again after a year of being non-verbal. I slowly started to learn how to talk again. At first it was just a few words, but then I developed selective mutism, and I could only speak to a few people, like close family members. And then eventually my voice fully returned.
Brilliant. And it's nice to have that sort of target in the future. To give you that incentive to, you know, to actually move, to talk, and basically do everything that we find as, you know, it just comes as standard.
And that was one of the hardest things, not being able to say how you feel.
Yeah.
And at least when I could talk, I could say how I felt and what I needed. And when I was bedridden is when I faced some misunderstanding again, because the GP said I needed to get moving when I was physically paralysed and I couldn't walk.
Mm.
So I said, how could I get moving when I can't walk?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's...
Doctors for you.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Shouldn't say that while we're in hospital, because they probably wait outside for me and do me in or something like that. With that period then where you couldn't speak, I mean, how did you make other people know, you know, your parents and the doctors know sort of what you wanted, how you felt?
I did facial expressions.
Right.
If I moved my thumb a little bit, that meant juice for drink.
All right. Yeah.
That meant drink. And to be honest, I can't even remember, really. It's all a bit of a blur. But I think we managed somehow, you know, to, I could, yeah, it was probably through, I think we did, with the speech therapy as well, I think we did, there was even doing sign language, I think, at one point, yeah.
It's fascinating. When did the breakthrough come then for the doctors anyway, when they found out sort of what it was and, you know, sort of what they could do to help you?
Well, they said there's nothing they can do. That's what they said. They couldn't do anything apart from wait for me to improve.
So it was all on your shoulders, basically.
Yeah, and there's no magic cure for FND either. There's no medicine. I've been on loads of different medications throughout the years, but nothing really worked. You know, nothing really helped with my stiffness or my symptoms. Nothing really helped. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned London, of course, and anybody who's looked online, you always sort of there with that I Love London T-shirt. One of the songs that you've chosen is by Ed Sheeran and Stormzy, called Take Me Back to London. Is there any sort of special sort of meaning for that?
Or? Well, like I said, when I was poorly, I formed a special bond with London, and that's what I say, Take Me Back to London.
Just explain what FND stands for.
Functional Neurological Disorder.
Brilliant. London, we've been talking about, of course, and while that record was on, was talking about sort of, well, basically everything to do with London. And you touched on one subject about sort of travelling around London and everything, and the accessibility, because, you know, you're in a wheelchair, and even today, the accessibility for people in wheelchairs is not as good as what it could be. Yeah,
it needs improving, but I think we're getting there. Yeah, but there's still a long way to go with accessibility. And see, some shops don't have ramps, and I think every shop should have a ramp to get into. But some of them look at you like, oh, no, we don't. But, well, if they don't have a ramp, then they're not worthy of my custom.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you want to spend your money somewhere else. Yeah. What's your favourite shops then? Because, normally, your mum's in there as well. I bet she likes shopping.
Yeah.
So, I mean, shopping in London, so what's your favourite shops?
Well, all the London gift shops, souvenir shops, because I've got a special London box and I keep all my special London gifts and souvenirs in it. And altogether, I must have at least 100 items from all the years I've collected all my gifts and souvenirs.
You'll need a bigger house.
Yeah.
Just for your souvenirs.
I know. It's jam-packed. There's no room left for anything else. Yeah.
This FND then, I mean, is this a lifetime illness or...?
We aren't sure. Symptoms can come and go, but with mine, I've had it for the last 10 years now. A lot has improved, but then I have had occasional setbacks when I've lost the ability to walk again and like, oh no, back to where I started. But we're hoping one day I can hopefully be free of FND, but we're not 100% sure if I'll ever fully recover, just because of the impact of having severe FND. It's left me with other problems. But if I can achieve what I've achieved in the last few years, which we'll get onto in a bit, I'm sure I can hopefully one day FND won't be an issue like it is at the moment.
I mean, you were 12 when this hit you. Is this a young person's disease or you know, doesn't it sort of specify sort of how old you need to be to...
Well, I think it can be affected by anybody, but it's becoming more common now, and it's actually known as the most common condition you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And it's affecting more young people as well.
It just amazes that with all this sort of, you know, technology and everything that goes off within the medical world, something like this comes along, which completely sort of throws a spanner in the works, and they know nothing about, and they don't know how to cure it. And we'll see what the sort of oncoming years bring us. Then, so I mean, how does that? We've we've heard how it was sort of when you were 12, and sort of in the last few years. How does FND affect you today? Then, is it sort of? I hate to say better, because that's not the right word, but. Has the lifestyle that you've got today with FND, has it got better or How does it affect you?
Well, like I said, I have made a lot of progress because I'm now able to talk again. I can walk with support. I can stand unaided, which is something I've achieved recently, and that was a big achievement to do that. I'm adjusting to life post-severe FND, really, and learning to live with my new normal, even though it feels like I've had it forever, because I can't really remember the early days of my illness and life before it is a blur. But for those really difficult days with FND, I look back on them and think, gosh, I can't believe that ever happened. But so when I was bedridden, eventually, after 3 years, is when I slowly started to learn how to move my arms again, and then slowly learned how to sit up. Because the wheelchair services said no wheelchair was suitable for me, because nothing was, because the only place I could tolerate sitting on was my bed. And then after 3 years, it probably took a few months, I slowly started to learn how to sit up with support. And then I was given a new wheelchair. And my first outing in 3 years was actually to the local wheelchair services to collect my new wheelchair. And it felt amazing to be back in the outside world again after years of being housebound.
Back to London. Let's go back to London, because that's your favourite place. Yeah. So, and Loose Women, they played a big part. So tell us a little bit about how Loose Women have sort of moved you a little bit further along the journey.
Well, when I was poorly, I formed a special bond with the show as well, like London, and they heard about my story and they sent me a video message. And then when I was well enough, I went to meet some of them in the studio, and since then I've met 15 of the panellists.
Wow.
And they gave me some special items as well, exclusive items. And it was wonderful to meet them in person.
Who's your favourite?
Well, it used to be Carol McGiffin, but she left, but she sent me a video message.
Oh, my.
So it was wonderful to hear from her.
Yeah.
You know, and I've met quite a few of the different panellists. But like I said, Carol was my favourite. I'd still like to meet her one day, but you never know.
So, hey, there's still time left. Yeah, so I mean, it makes it sound like I watch Loose Women, which I don't. So I just know some of them. Linda Nolan has always been the one that I wanted to meet.
Well, I've actually met Colleen Nolan. I've met her.
Colleen, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah,
I've met her.
I've met Linda Nolan. It's Colleen. That's her.
Yeah, I've met Colleen. Yeah.
So what's she like?
Yeah, she's nice. She said it's lovely to meet you, Liam. And, you know, I had a picture with all of them. And, yeah.
So I've got a bit of a crush on her.
Oh, have you?
I met her years and years ago when she was little, Colleen Nolan, when she was the baby of the Nolan sisters. She's even better now, she is. So, but that's my secret crush. Yeah. Secret crush. Who's your secret crush?
I don't know, really. I've not really got one.
Gavin, who's your secret crush?
Martin McCutcheon.
Of course, we were talking about Martin earlier on.
Yeah.
So very silly little things. So, how are you sort of liking television studios? Because obviously you've got all the cameras, all the lights, everybody rushing around there as well.
Well, I've had my story featured on BBC's Midlands Today, which was a big achievement, seeing my story on the TV to raise awareness. And it was wonderful to... it was just a big achievement, really, just hopefully helping to spread the word and get the message out there about FND.
And I know that you've done quite a bit of stuff online as well, sort of with sort of different blogs that I've looked at and everything.
Yeah,
so
I'm really pushing to raise awareness.
Yeah. Is that something that I was going to say enjoy doing, but with the subject matter not being one of those that, you know, sort of you can be sort of happy clappy about and everything, but do you enjoy sort of doing that sort of thing and educating people to what this is and that, you know, how it affects people?
It's given me another purpose, really, since FND. It's given me something to focus on and just hopefully really get the message out there and raise awareness.
And that's what we need with, you know, with sort of, I mean, if the doctors don't know that much about FND, you know, the average bloke in the street isn't going to know an awful lot as well. Now then, let's play another piece of music. The Police and Every Breath You Take. Why this choice?
Well, that's for my dad. He likes that song.
Liam Virgo, who's here to tell us all about FND. How common is FND in young people? Because while that song was on, you said that They thought that you'd be sort of the first young person, you know, to suffer from severe FND.
Probably one of the first children in Nottinghamshire to get severe FND in the way that I got it. But see, when I first got it, it was classed as a rare condition, but now it's becoming more of a common condition. But it affects people in different ways. Not one person is the same who's got FND. We all have different symptoms and abilities.
Do you know sort of how many people in the UK suffer from this?
I think it's around 100,000.
That's still not an awful lot, really, is it? It sounds big.
Yeah. It sounds a lot, but it's not. But it's still quite a lot, you know, 100,000. And it, like I said, out of those 100,000 patients, not one of us is the same, you know.
So I suppose they can't... There's not sort of like a one cures all, if you like. It's sort of all different bits of information that need to put together for each individual case.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how far do you feel medical knowledge about this has advanced? And do you know sort of if there's anything that's in the pipeline to maybe cure it in the future?
I think there's research being done.
Yeah.
But as of yet, nobody's really come up with any effective treatments because there's no specific treatment plans available and there's no actual, like I said, medications or anything. You've just got to manage your symptoms and hope you can recover, you know.
Mm. Do you know if there's any sort of research that's currently up and running about it to find out more about this?
Possibly. I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think there is research being done in the background of hopefully if you don't like cure it, you can hopefully manage it better.
Not
make it so severe.
So what is the process then for FND for you? I mean, I don't suppose it's anything as sort of simple as taking tablets every day to do. So what's the process that you have got with your stress, your strain of FND?
Well, now it's about, I'm recovered from severe FND, but I'm not recovered from the FND itself.
Right.
It's about management. It's about probably like being kind to yourself and knowing what I can and can't do. And it's about... See, motivation has always played a big part in my rehabilitation, whether it's motivation to visit London, meet my favourite celebrities. All of that has helped me to give me something to work towards. Even if I can't do it at the moment, it will give me something to, as the end goal, give me something to hopefully focus on. And at the moment, my next big goal is to visit Cyprus because I've got Cypriot heritage and it's where all my favourite food comes from.
Oh, brilliant. So if you can go over there and sort of partake of the food.
Yeah, and my favourite food is keftedis and they are Cypriot meatballs.
All right.
And they're absolutely delicious and hopefully I can achieve that goal. And just going abroad will be a big achievement because that's something I've not really done before. And just going on a plane as well. It would be just a big... that will be a milestone moment in my rehabilitation.
Absolutely. What's the access like for people with wheelchairs, sort of boarding planes and going abroad?
It needs to change,
yeah.
But it's getting there, I think. I think there's talks about having wheelchairs stay on the planes.
Right.
Rather than... because that will cause a lot of issues, I think. Because really, I think it is being discussed where... for people to stay in the wheelchairs on the planes, but it's still in the early days yet.
See, I'm completely ignorant about anything. I've only been on a plane twice in my life, and you know they just wedge you in that seat and that's it. So, but I didn't realise that sort of wheelchair users can't stay in the wheelchairs.
They've got to be boarded on a plane in a different, whether it be a sling or something. I'm not sure because I've never been on one.
Yeah.
But hopefully, well. Ideally, it'll be next year I get to achieve that goal, but we're not 100% sure what the wheelchair situation will look like, but that's something we'll have to look into.
Mm, yeah. Now, you've done a lot to educate people about FND. How can people find out more about what FND is and how it affects, you know, sort of people like yourself?
You can go on the NHS website and FND Hope, which is the national FND charity. And they can give you advice and support on what FND is, if you think you might have it, or if you may know someone who's got it. And to be honest, there's a lot of FND charities out there who support people, because I'm involved with a few FND charities and I've shared my story with them, and I'm hoping that there'll probably be even more FND charities eventually.
How would you like to see sort of that this knowledge sort of passed out to people? Because I think it's only if people actually go out and look for the information they're going to find out about this. Is there something in particular that you would like to sort of have made aware to people about? And especially if people sort of start off with the symptoms that you had back when you were 12 and don't know about what it is.
I think just having it more discussed.
Yeah.
And I think the NHS probably needs to probably talk about it more if they suspect somebody who might have it. And I just think, see, a lot of problems, what's happened in the past is the mislabelling of conditions and being misdiagnosed as other illnesses when it's not the case, it's FND. Even though they've probably got to test a lot of things first, I don't think they should be quick to pass something off as a mental health problem.
Absolutely.
When they did with me, they said I've got, when it wasn't, it was FND.
Yeah. What about education of sort of doctors? Because I believe from reading somewhere that this sort of thing isn't actually, if you like, trained to doctors, and they don't know anything.
No, it's not taught in medical schools, but I think it needs to be.
Yeah.
It needs more training, awareness and understanding and empathy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not just, I don't know, the general public who... Yeah. Need to be educated by it. It's the people who can actually do something about it as well. So do you know if there's anything in place sort of medically in medical schools to actually train this out as a specialised subject?
I think the government are doing things in the background, I think, from what I've seen, because another thing what's happening at the moment is I'm in talks to potentially have my story discussed in Parliament as an example case of someone who's been fighting severe FND since childhood, and the local MP is hopefully going to help with getting my story discussed and hopefully helping to get FND training more available and more support for patients living with FND, because at the moment there's not much support out there for people living with the condition.
So with the parliamentary thing then, would that mean you going down and sort of talking to people?
Well, we're not sure yet. Whether it's me going down and just having my name mentioned,
you
know, I'm not sure. But we're still in the early days at the moment, but we're hopeful, you know, we can get it discussed in Parliament, because it really needs to be.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you need to go down there and tell them what's what.
Yeah.
Because then they can ask you... They're going to get the answers then from somebody who, you know, knows firsthand about it.
And for a 13-year-old's body to just completely shut down like it did with me, it needs to be spoken about really right now. But I think it needs a lot more attention to it, and it needs more just awareness, which is what I'm trying to do by sharing my story with you today. And hopefully I've helped to shine a light on my condition.
Well, it's definitely educated me anyway, even though I've done... You know, a bit of research, the stuff there, which it just seems quite shocking that, you know, in 2026, there's these diseases that people don't really know. I mean, would you class it as a disease? Or?
No, I'd probably... A disorder.
A disorder, yeah.
There's
these disorders that people don't know anything about. And for you, it's your everyday life.
And for a disorder that can leave you disabled as well.
Yeah.
It's... probably an emergency, really, because if it can do that to me, it can do it to somebody else.
Exactly. And at that age as well, when, you know, you should be sort of running around playing football in the park and going out with your mates and, you know, everything, going nightclubbing and stuff like that, you've missed out on such a lot. So I mean, do you feel that you've missed out on a lot?
Probably but then I've got to think, I have had a lot of... Recently, I've probably had opportunities that not many people would get, whether it's meeting my favourite celebrities or, you know, another goal I've achieved is I've visited 100 towns and cities across the UK. Because when I was housebound, I thought, when I'm able to go out, I want to go out again.
Yeah.
And I've successfully achieved that goal. So I've visited cities like Manchester, Birmingham, Leeds, Liverpool, Edinburgh. You know,
Edinburgh is brilliant.
Yeah.
I love Edinburgh. So that's what you've done sort of in the past. What other plans and ambitions going forward?
Well, Cyprus, that's the next one. And
what's the name of those meatballs?
Kev Deddy's, yeah. So Cyprus is the dream travel destination. I think with the awareness, F&D awareness, to get it in Parliament, which is hopefully going to happen. And one day, I'm hopeful, if I'm able to, I would love to live in London, my favourite place. That would be the ultimate end goal, if I'm able to do that.
Well, good luck with that. How you speak this morning, the drive that you've got, I think there's every possibility of you doing that. Thank you so much for sharing your story and telling us a little bit about FND. The final song, which I love, is by Sigma and Hope. It's going to be a daft question, really, but why that final choice?
Well, it's about the power of hope in rehabilitation, and it's all I had was hope when I was bedbound, so I thought to choose that song because it's about hope.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Liam. We'll see you sometime in the future.
You know, the one thing that we are always looking for at NHR is willing volunteers. Whether it's presenting a show, visiting the wards, fundraising, or many other roles that we have, it's bound to be a rewarding experience. On top of that, you'll be having a positive impact on the time that people spend in hospital. So log on to nhradio.org.uk and go to the contact page and find out how you can get involved with us here at Nottingham Hospitals Radio.